You're listening to All Things Cage at Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears. I'm your host, Laura Kuhn, director of the John Cage Trust, and my guest tonight is none other than John Cage himself, reciting his groundbreaking 1950 text piece, Lecture on Nothing. Throughout the late 1980s, John Cage took to recording a lot of his own text pieces. I can still see him doing this, seated at the small breakfast table in the 18th Street loft he shared with Merce Cunningham, hunched over a small portable cassette recorder. This might have been for posterity, a laying down of works that he feared might simply disappear into the mists of history. Or it might have simply been a way of productively revisiting earlier ideas. The archives of the John Cage Trust hold many of these recordings, transferred from their original cassette tapes to DATs and CDs, including Lecture on Nothing. Cage's Lecture on Nothing was, in its time, groundbreaking for various reasons, introducing, as it did, musical elements, including silence, into an act of relentless, often repetitive speech. The piece is built on a rhythmic structure and lasts, in Cage's reading, just shy of 54 minutes. Don't try adjusting the volume on your radio at about the 46-minute mark, by the way. Here, Cage introduces his longest stretch of silence, which lasts for about 2 minutes. The text of Lecture on Nothing is overall quite sensible, and at times retreated to phrases of gnomic simplicity. One of Cage's most well-known statements, "I have nothing to say and I am saying it, and that is poetry as I need it," comes from Lecture on Nothing. And Lecture on Nothing was composed on the heels of Cage's still infamous 4 minutes and 33 seconds, which, although not publicly performed until 1952, was foreshadowed in conceptual references years before in various of Cage's writings and talks. Take a look at A Composer's Confession, which Cage delivered at the National Intercollegiate Arts Conference at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York, on February 28, 1948. 4:33 is a work that audaciously instructs the player not to play, thereby giving voice to the ambient sounds of the venue itself, in effect creating a unique acoustic event. In its first performance, the player was the pianist David Tudor, who presented 4:33 on August 29, 1952, at the Maverick Concert Hall in Woodstock, New York. Tudor chose to mark the work's three movements by resetting his stopwatch and then reopening and reclosing the lid of the piano. No recording of this first performance exists, but it's not difficult to imagine the late summer sounds of the open-air venue and the sounds of disapproval being expressed by some of the audience members, who were in all likelihood totally unprepared for what they would or wouldn't hear. 4:33 was not a whimsical act, but a composition that took several days to compose, involving a process, Cage explains, wherein he built each of the three movements by stringing together short silences. And that it took him several years to come to the decision to make it, and that he'd lost friends over it. Cage first delivered Lecture on Nothing at the Artists Club in New York City, more familiarly known as The Club, which officially opened its doors in October of 1949. Its founding members were among the most renowned artists of the time, most of them abstract expressionists, who fixed up a third-floor loft at 39 East 8th Street, not insignificantly proximate to the Cedar Tavern at 24 University Place, a beloved watering hole. The club evolved into a center of the New York art world, an important place where artists met as a deliberate, grounding community to discuss intellectual and artistic ideas. While the precise date of Cage's first reading of Lecture on Nothing isn't known, it was likely given as part of the formal Friday night lectures and panels that the club hosted that featured artists who had been invited by members, and reputedly who were paid with a bottle of liquor, if they were paid at all. Anyone interested in reading about the club might pick up a copy of Morton Feldman's wonderful collection of writings entitled Give My Regards to 8th Street, published by Exact Change in 2004. More recently, see Mary Gabriel's 2017 Ninth Street Women, published by Little, Brown & Company, which features the work of painters Lee Krasner, Elaine de Kooning, Grace Hartigan, Joan Mitchell, and Helen Frankenthaler. Now, on to John Cage reading Lecture on Nothing. The text itself can be found in its entirety in John Cage's 1962 first publication with Wesleyan University Press, Silence.
I am here, and there is nothing to say. If among you are those who wish to get somewhere, let them leave at any moment. What we require is silence, but what silence requires is that I go on talking. Give anyone thought a push. It falls down easily, but the pusher and the pushed produce that entertainment called a discussion. Shall we have one later? Or we could simply decide not to have a discussion. Whatever you like. But now there are silences, and the words make, help make the silences. I have nothing to say. And I am saying it. And that is poetry as I need it. This space of time is organized. We need not fear these silences. We may love them. This is a composed talk, for I am making it, just as I make a piece of music. It is like a glass of milk. We need the glass, and we need the milk. Or again, it is like an empty glass. Into which, at any moment, anything may be poured. As we go along, who knows? An idea may occur in this talk. I have no idea whether one will or not. If one does, let it. Regard it as something seen momentarily, as though from a window while traveling. If across Kansas, then of course Kansas, Arizona is more interesting, almost too interesting. Especially for a New Yorker who is being interested in spite of himself in everything. Now he knows he needs the Kansas in him. Kansas is like nothing on earth, and for a New Yorker very refreshing. It is like an empty glass, nothing but wheat, or is it corn? Does it matter which? Kansas has this about it. At any instant, one may leave it, and whenever one wishes, one may return to it. Or you may leave it forever and never return to it, for we possess nothing. Our poetry now is the realization that we possess nothing. Anything, therefore, is a delight, since we do not possess it, and thus need not fear its loss. We need not destroy the past. It is gone. At any moment it might reappear and seem to be and be the present. Would it be a repetition? Only if we thought we owned it. But since we don't, it is free and so are we. Most anybody knows about the future and how uncertain it is. What I am calling poetry is often called content. I myself have called it form. It is the continuity of a piece of music. Continuity today, when it is necessary, is the demonstration of disinterestedness. That is, it is a proof that our delight lies in not possessing anything. Each moment presents what happens. How different this form sense is from that which is bound up with memory, themes and secondary themes, their struggle, their development, the climax, the recapitulation, which is the belief that one may own one's own home. But actually, unlike the snail, we carry our homes within us, which enables us to fly or to stay, to enjoy each. But beware of that which is breathtakingly beautiful. For at any moment, the telephone may ring, or the airplane come down in a vacant lot. A piece of string, or a sunset, possessing neither, each acts, and the continuity happens. Nothing more than nothing can be said. Hearing or making this in music is not different, only simpler than living this way. Simpler, that is, for me, because it happens that I write music. That music is simple to make comes from one's willingness to accept the limitations of structure. Structure is simple because it can be thought out, figured out, measured. It is a discipline which, accepted, in return accepts whatever. Even those rare moments of ecstasy, which, as sugar loaves train horses, train us to make what we may. How could I better tell what structure is than simply to tell about this talk, which is contained within a space of time approximately 40 minutes long. That 40 minutes has been divided into five large parts, and each unit is divided likewise. Subdivision involving a square root is the only possible subdivision which permits this micro-macrocosmic rhythmic structure, which I find so acceptable and accepting. As you see, I can say anything. It makes very little difference what I say, or even how I say it. At this particular moment, we are passing through the fourth part of a unit, which is the second unit in the second large part of this talk. It is a little bit like passing through Kansas. This now is the end of that second unit. Now begins the third unit of the second part. Now the second part of that third unit. Now its third part. Now its fourth part, which, by the way, is just the same length as the third part. Now the fifth and last part. You have just experienced the structure of this talk from a microcosmic point of view. From a macrocosmic point of view, we are just passing the halfway point in the second large part. The first part was a rather rambling discussion of nothing, form, and continuity, when it is the way we now need it. This second part is about structure, how simple it is, what it is, and why we should be willing to accept its limitations. Most speeches are full of ideas. This one doesn't have to have any. But at any moment an idea may come along, then we may enjoy it. Structure without life is dead. But life without structure is unseen. Pure life expresses itself within and through structure. Each moment is absolute, alive and significant. Blackbirds rise from a field, making a sound delicious beyond compare. I heard them because I accepted the limitations of an arts conference in a Virginia girls finishing school, which limitations allowed me, quite by accident, to hear the blackbirds as they flew up and overhead. There was a social calendar and hours for breakfast, but one day I saw a cardinal, and the same day heard a woodpecker. I also met America's youngest college president. However, she has resigned, and people say she is going into politics. Let her. Why shouldn't she? I also had the pleasure of hearing an eminent music critic exclaim that he hoped he would live long enough to see the end of this craze for Bach. A pupil once said to me, "I understand what you say about Beethoven, and I think I agree But I have a very serious question to ask you. How do you feel about Bach? Now we have come to the end of the part about structure. However, it occurs to me to say more about structure, specifically this. We are now at the beginning of the third part. And that part is not the part devoted to structure. It's the part about material. But I'm still talking about structure. It must be clear from that structure has no point. And as we have seen, form has no point either. Clearly, we are beginning to get nowhere. Unless some other idea crops up about it, that is all I have to say about structure. Now about material. Is it interesting? It is and it isn't. But one thing is certain. If one is making something which is to be nothing, the one making must love and be patient with the material he chooses. Otherwise he calls attention to the material, which is precisely something, whereas it was nothing that was being made. Or he calls attention to himself, whereas nothing is anonymous. The technique of handling materials is on the sense level what structure as a discipline is on the rational level, a means of experiencing nothing. I remember loving sound before I ever took a music lesson. And so we make our lives by what we love. Last year, when I talked here, I made a short talk. That was because I was talking about something. But this year I am talking about nothing. And of course we'll go on talking for a long time. The other day a pupil said, after trying to compose a melody, using only three tones, I felt limited. Had she concerned herself with the three tones, her materials, she would not have felt limited. And since materials are without feeling, there would not have been any limitation. It was all in her mind, whereas it belonged in the materials. It became something by not being nothing. It would have been nothing by being something. Should one use the materials characteristic of one's time? Now there's a question that ought to get us somewhere. It is an intellectual question. I shall answer it slowly and autobiographically. I remember as a child loving all the sounds, even the unprepared ones. I liked them especially when there was one at a time. A five-finger exercise for one hand was full of beauty. Later on, I gradually liked all the intervals. As I look back, I realized that I began liking the octave. I accepted the major and minor thirds. Perhaps of all the intervals, I like these thirds least. Through the music of Grieg, I became passionately fond of the fifth. Or perhaps you could call it puppy dog love. For the fifth did not make me want to write music. It made me want to devote my life to playing the works of Grieg. When later I heard modern music, I took like a duck to water, to all the modern intervals, the sevenths, the seconds, the tritone, and the fourth. I liked Bach too about this time, but I didn't like the sound of the thirds and sixths. What I admired in Bach was the way many things went together. As I keep on remembering, I see that I never really liked the thirds, and this explains why I never really liked Brahms. Modern music fascinated me with all its modern intervals, the sevenths, the seconds, the tritone, and the fourth. And always, every now and then, there was a fifth, and that pleased me. Sometimes there were single tones, not intervals at all, and that was a delight. There were so many intervals in modern music that it fascinated me rather than that I loved it. And being fascinated by it, I decided to write it. Writing it at first is difficult. That is, putting the mind on it takes the ear off it. However, doing it alone, I was free to hear that a high sound is different from a low sound, even when both are called by the same letter. After several years of working alone, I began to feel lonely. Studying with a teacher, I learned that the intervals have meaning. They are not just sounds, but they imply in their progressions a sound not actually present to the ear. Tonality. I never liked tonality. I worked at it, studied it, but I never had any feeling for it. For instance, there are some progressions called deceptive cadences. The idea is this: progress in such a way as to imply the presence of a tone not actually present, then fool everyone by not landing on it, land somewhere else. What is being fooled? Not the ear, but the mind. The whole question is very intellectual. However, modern music still fascinated me, with all its modern intervals. But in order to have them, the mind had fixed it so that one had to avoid having progressions that would make one think of sounds that were not actually present to the ear. Avoiding did not appeal to me. I began to see that the separation of mind and ear had spoiled the sounds, that a clean slate was necessary. This made me not only contemporary, but avant-garde. I used noises. They had not been intellectualized. The ear could hear them directly and didn't have to go through any abstraction about them. I found that I liked noises even more than I liked intervals. I liked noises just as much as I had liked single sounds. Noises, too, had been discriminated against And being American, having been trained to be sentimental, I fought for noises. I liked being on the side of the underdog. I got police permission to play sirens. The most amazing noise I ever found was that produced by means of a coil of wire attached to the pickup arm of a phonograph and then amplified. It was shocking, really shocking, and thunderous. Half intellectually and half sentimentally, when the war came along, I decided to use only quiet sounds. There seemed to me to be no truth, no good in anything big in society. But quiet sounds were like loneliness, or love, or friendship. Permanent, I thought, values, independent at least from life, time, and Coca-Cola. I must say I still feel this way, but something else is happening. I begin to hear the old sounds, the ones I had thought worn out by intellectualization. I begin to hear the old sounds as though they are not worn out. Obviously, they are not worn out. They are just as audible as the new sounds. Thinking had worn them out. And if one stops thinking about them, suddenly they are fresh and new. If you think you are a ghost, you will become a ghost. Thinking the sounds worn out wore them out. So you see, this question brings us back where we were, nowhere, or if you like, where we are. I have a story. There was once a man standing on a high elevation. A company of several men who happened to be walking on the road noticed from the distance the man standing on the high place and talked among themselves about this man. One of them said, "He must have lost his favorite animal." Another man said, "No, it must be his friend whom he is looking for." A third one said, "He is just enjoying the cool air up there." The three could not agree. And the discussion, "Shall we have one later?" went on until they reached the high place where the man was. One of the three asked, "Oh, friend, standing up there, have you not lost your pet animal?" "No, sir, I have not lost any." The second man asked, "Have you not lost your friend?" "No, sir, I have not lost my friend either." The third man asked, "Are you not enjoying the fresh breeze up there?" "No, sir, I am not." "What then are you standing up there for? If you say no to all our questions." The man on high said, "I just stand. If there are no questions, there are no answers. If there are questions, then of course there are answers. But the final answer makes the questions seem absurd, whereas the questions up until then seem more intelligent than the answers." Somebody asked Debussy how he wrote music. He said, "I take all the tones there are, leave out the ones I don't want, and use all the others." Satie said, When I was young, people told me, you'll see when you're 50 years old. Now I'm 50. I've seen nothing. Here we are now at the beginning of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, I have the feeling that we are getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, we are getting nowhere. And that is a pleasure. It is not irritating to be where one is. It is only irritating to think one would like to be somewhere else. Here we are now, a little bit after the beginning of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, we have the feeling that I am getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, slowly, we have the feeling we are getting nowhere. That is a pleasure which will continue. If we are irritated, it is not a pleasure. Nothing is not a pleasure if one is irritated. But suddenly, it is a pleasure. And then more and more, it is not irritating. And then more and more, and slowly. Originally, we were nowhere. And now again, we are having the pleasure of being slowly nowhere. If anybody is sleepy, let him go to sleep. Here we are now at the beginning of the third unit of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, I have the feeling that we are getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, we are getting nowhere, and that is a pleasure. It is not irritating to be where one is. It is only irritating to think one would like to be somewhere else. Here we are now, a little bit after the beginning of the third unit of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, we have the feeling that I am getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, slowly, we have the feeling we are getting nowhere. That is a pleasure which will continue. If we are irritated, it is not a pleasure. Nothing is not a pleasure if one is irritated. But suddenly, it is a pleasure. And then more and more, it is not irritating. And then more and more, and slowly. Originally, we were nowhere. And now again, we are having the pleasure of being slowly nowhere. If anybody is sleepy, Let him go to sleep. Here we are now, at the beginning of the fifth unit of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, I have the feeling that we are getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, we are getting nowhere, and that is a pleasure. It is not irritating to be where one is. It is only irritating to think one would like to be somewhere else. Here we are now, a little bit after the beginning of the fifth unit of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, we have the feeling that I am getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, slowly, we have the feeling we are getting nowhere. That is a pleasure which will continue. If we are irritated, it is not a pleasure. Nothing is not a pleasure if one is irritated. But suddenly, it is a pleasure. And then more and more, it is not irritating. And then more and more, and slowly. Originally, we were nowhere. And now again, we are having the pleasure of being slowly nowhere. If anybody is sleepy, let him go to sleep. Here we are now at the middle of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, I have the feeling that we are getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, we are getting nowhere, and that is a pleasure. It is not irritating to be where one is. It is only irritating to think one would like to be somewhere else. Here we are now, a little bit after the middle of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, we have the feeling that I am getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, slowly, we have the feeling we are getting nowhere. That is a pleasure which will continue. If we are irritated, it is not a pleasure. Nothing is not a pleasure if one is irritated. But suddenly, it is a pleasure. And then more and more, it is not irritating. And then more and more, and slowly, originally, we were nowhere, and now again, we are having the pleasure of being slowly nowhere. If anybody is sleepy, let him go to sleep. Here we are now, at the beginning of the ninth unit of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, I have the feeling that we are getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, we are getting nowhere, and that is a pleasure. It is not irritating to be where one is. It is only irritating to think one would like to be somewhere else. Here we are now, a little bit after the beginning of the ninth unit of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more we have the feeling that I am getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, slowly, we have the feeling we are getting nowhere. That is a pleasure which will continue. If we are irritated, it is not a pleasure. Nothing is not a pleasure if one is irritated. But suddenly, it is a pleasure. And then more and more, it is not irritating. And then more and more, and slowly. Originally, we were nowhere. And now again, we are having the pleasure of being slowly nowhere. If anybody is sleepy, let him go to sleep. Here we are now at the beginning of the 11th unit of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, I have the feeling that we are getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, we are getting nowhere. And that is a pleasure. It is not irritating to be where one is. It is only irritating to think one would like to be somewhere else. Here we are now, a little bit after the beginning of the 11th unit of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, we have the feeling that I am getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, slowly, we have the feeling we are getting nowhere. That is a pleasure which will continue. If we are irritated, it is not a pleasure. Nothing is not a pleasure if one is irritated. But suddenly, it is a pleasure. And then more and more, it is not irritating. And then more and more, and slowly, originally, we were nowhere, and now again, we are having the pleasure of being slowly nowhere. If anybody is sleepy, let him go to sleep. Here we are now, at the beginning of the 13th unit of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, I have the feeling that we are getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, we are getting nowhere, and that is a pleasure. It is not irritating to be where one is. It is only irritating to think one would like to be somewhere else. Here we are now, a little bit after the beginning of the 13th unit of the fourth large part of this talk. More and more, we have the feeling that I am getting nowhere. Slowly, as the talk goes on, slowly, we have the feeling we are getting nowhere. That is a pleasure which will continue. If we are irritated, it is not a pleasure. Nothing is not a pleasure if one is irritated. But suddenly, it is a pleasure. And then more and more, it is not irritating. And then more and more, and slowly, originally, we were nowhere. And now again, we are having the pleasure of being slowly nowhere. If anybody is sleepy, let him go to sleep. That is finished now. It was a pleasure. And now, this is a pleasure. Read me that part again where I disinherit everybody. The 12-tone row is a method. A method is a control of each single note. There is too much there. There is not enough of nothing in it. A structure is like a bridge from nowhere to nowhere, and anyone may go on it. Noises or tones, corn or wheat, does it matter which? I thought there were 88 tones. You can quarter them too. If it were feet, would it be a two-tone row? Or can we fly from here to where? I have nothing against the 12-tone row, but it is a method, not a structure. We really do need a structure so we can see we are nowhere. Much of the music I love uses the 12-tone row, but that is not why I love it. I love it for no reason. I love it for suddenly I am nowhere. My own music does that quickly for me. And it seems to me I could listen forever to Japanese shakuhachi music or the Navajo yebichai. Or I could sit or stand near Richard Lippold's Full Moon any length of time. Chinese bronzes, how I love them. But those beauties which others have made tend to stir up the need to possess, and I know I possess nothing. Record collections, that is not music. The phonograph is a thing, not a musical instrument. A thing leads to other things, whereas a musical instrument leads to nothing. Would you like to join a society called Capitalists Incorporated? Just so no one would think we were communists. Anyone joining automatically becomes president. To join, you must show you've destroyed at least 100 records, or in the case of tape, one sound mirror. To imagine you own any piece of music is to miss the whole point. There is no point, or the point is nothing, and even a long playing record is a thing. A lady from Texas said, I live in Texas. We have no music in Texas. The reason they've no music in Texas is because they have recordings in Texas. Remove the records from Texas and someone will learn to sing. Everybody has a song, which is no song at all. It is a process of singing, and when you sing, you are where you are. All I know about method is that when I am not working, I sometimes think I know something, but when I am working, it is quite clear that I know nothing.